We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Diana Sheets joins me in the studio this afternoon. She's a research scholar in the departments of English and History at the University of Illinois. She's also the author of two novels. The latest is American Sweet, a send-up of Chiclet and more. And the title is American Sweet, S-U-I-T-E. She'll read from the book Thursday afternoon at 4:30 in the Author's Corner of the Illini Union Bookstore. At the outset of American Sweet, here's what you'll first run into. A quick scene of a very angry man wailing away at the inside of a neighbor woman's house with a crowbar. Right after that, a series of dispatches from all manner of media letting us in on what Diana Sheets will skewer in this novel, including our fascination with celebrity, the sensational, and ourselves. Diana Sheets, welcome.
Thank you, Celeste. It's great to be here.
The media pieces you created for the beginning of this novel, great fun. How did you hit on that idea, and was it fun to write those pieces?
It was a blast to write them. I was really thinking of Tom Wolfe's Bonfire of the Vanities at the very end of his novel. He has a bunch of newspaper articles. In my memory, I thought it was only one, and I was very relieved to see there were several. I wanted to capture the insanity of today's celebrity-driven memoir culture. And to do that, you have to step outside a diary novel for a moment. And by newspapers and television, I thought I could capture it. And I thought it was really great fun to put really what's basically the end at the beginning of the novel and then go back to the story so it could gradually build to tell, to tell the story.
Yeah. When I came to the account in University Praxis, you had me on the floor. It reminds us how we're so enamored of celebrity, and it finds itself into every part of our culture.
Yes. I think it's Professor Elizabeth Hulse, and she's a postmodernist, and she's in the Center for Bipolar Justice. And believe it or not, I took a lot of the language directly from all the postmodern jargon, and particularly one faculty member who used to teach here. So, and then the trick was just to make it grammatically correct.
Now, the novel unfolds in the diaries of three women: Rosalind Selby and her daughters, Sophie and Arissa. Can you give us a quick description of each character?
Sure. Rosalind is in her early 70s, and she's Christian, but she thinks she's Jewish because she grew up in New York, and she's moved back into Manhattan. And so she speaks Yiddish, and it's a way of expressing her anger and her rage, and really the absurdity of being an older, bright woman and losing your values, basically the world no longer following them. And Sophie is the eldest daughter. She's very practical. She lives in Connecticut. She has a husband and three boys. And I wanted to have some fun with her because she's the most conventional character. So eventually the three sons embrace different religions. Tobias, the eldest one, follows his grandmother. And the middle one, he embraces Hinduism. And the youngest, Frederick, is Christian like his father. So I got to have fun really with the culture war that is going on in America today.
And it also seems that we've always kind of done this, but maybe it's like on steroids now. What we've always been people who say, well, I'm going to remake myself.
Absolutely. And with America becoming much more multicultural, the question is, how do you reconcile all these different identities? And so I really wanted to have, through the lens of a conventional chick lit novel, I really wanted to upend all the conventions about chick lit, but also what America is today. And the third character is really the heart of the story. That's Arissa. She's moved from Manhattan to the Midwest, and she really feels she's entered a very foreign land. So it's a very skewed perspective of how a New Yorker might see the land of the overly friendly people.
Now, you spent many years living in New York before you came to the Midwest in Champaign-Urbana. How long have you lived in Champaign-Urbana, and did you have to do some adjustment when you got here?
Oh, absolutely. I should say that my mother grew up in rural Iowa, and half the members of my family went to the University of Iowa, and I had decided that I would absolutely never go to the Midwest, and even though I'd visited my grandmother in Iowa. But, I'd grown up in Connecticut and lived 22 years in the metropolitan New York area, and it really makes you really edgy and aggressive. And I really found myself in culture shock when I came here. And I thought, well, this is great fun. I really have to write about it. Well, it's fresh. And really, it's sort of the cultures of Woody Allen colliding with Garrison Keillor from a feminine perspective.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the character Arissa Selby. She's left New York and her husband for the Midwest, where she hopes to write a novel. She's also, remaking herself, I would say, very definitely. And her mother and her sister think she's crazy for them. The Flatlands are to be flown over. And in fact, Rosalind says to her psychiatrist, Arissa is not even in Chicago. She's oozed out somewhere along the plains, living in Flatville. Why is Arissa drawn to the Midwest?
Because I'm trained as a historian, I'm trying to make this a contemporary historical landscape. And this is in the aftermath of 9/11. And she's suffered a tragedy, and she really has forgotten what it is. But she needs to leave New York. And she's looking for a refuge and peace. And she wants to write fiction, and she wants a place that's affordable and livable. And so she opts to live in the Midwest.
Yeah. Does she pick A town or B town?
Yeah. I've even gotten it confused which one she picks. Obviously I had fun. They're based on Champaign and Urbana. And the strangest thing when you come here is you say, well, why aren't they one town? So she goes, I think she goes to the one that I designate to be Champaign, which
yes,
is where
A-town.
I live.
Yeah.
A town. But I have a lot of fun with all these Midwestern twin cities, and why are there two, and what happens when they're almost identical but not quite.
Yeah. And A-Town is an hour ahead of B-Town.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a funny way of thinking about Champaign and Urbana, because when I came to town, someone described Urbana as being like a small town and Champaign being the big city. Go, go, go. And I thought that was kind of funny, but yeah, there's something to that.
Well, and I was reading in the News Gazette, when I first came here, and everything was like a discovery. But, in the rural lands outside Champaign or Urbana, they were in a different time zone, just as Indiana is on a different time zone. So not too long ago, if you'd have one time zone in Champaign and Urbana, you'd have another one when you went, just 30 or 50 miles away. So this seemed very strange to me.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a historian. I'm always looking for information that I can convert into fiction.
Yeah. Now, the title is American Suite, S-U-I-T-E. Are we thinking about a suite of rooms or music?
I'm thinking about it being a story about America, and this, so on a number of levels. It's taken from a work by Anton Dvorak. It's regarded as his quintessential American piece. It has Cakewalk, which was the precursor to jazz. It's got tonal elements of the prairie. And he really was the first one to capture, probably not the first one, but he tried to use local indigenous music to capture the spirit of a country. And he lived in Spillville, Iowa for 3 months, which is a Czech community. So when I was doing my research, I was traveling along Iowa and along the Mississippi, and I spent time in Spillville. I actually played on the organ that Dvorak played on, and it was just wonderful.
Is your first novel, The Cusp of Dreams, also satire?
The Cusp of Dreams is a much darker story. It's about the downsizing of America, and it's looking at what happens when we lose our manufacturing. So it's taking place in the 80s rather than today. And I really see it in the tradition of Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman and David Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross. If Death of a Salesman is the story of Willie Loman's failure, David Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross is a society failure, but neither of them had women in the landscape. So the question that I'm asking is the last taboo. What happens when women enter the workforce and they become every bit as aggressive as their male counterparts? And what does the social landscape become? And so it's got comedy, but it's only to keep you reading. I really call it tragedy with shards of comedy, whereas American Sweet is comedy with just enough pain to make it interesting, but it's comedy.
Yeah. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Diana Sheets, thank you so much.
Thank you, Celeste.